April 13th, 1999, 8:30 a.m., hearing room B.
This morning we're continuing hearing and possible work sessions on House Bill 5053, which is a transportation bill for the Department of HODA. This morning we have some invited testimony to begin with, and then I'd like to ask those, there are several people live quite a distance away from Salem, to come and testify and present their statements if they would. I'd like to begin the testimony this morning with Dr. John Tung, the Transportation Safety Committee. Dr. Tung? Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Senator Hannon. Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is John Tung. I'm an orthopedic surgeon practicing in Tualatin, Oregon, and I'm here speaking today as chair of the Oregon Transportation Safety Committee, which is an advisory body appointed by the governor to advise the Traffic Safety Division of ODOT. I've worked with Troy Casales, the division head, for 10 years and was appointed chair this past June by Governor Kitzhaber. Since that time, I've had the opportunity to speak to the transportation commissioners thanks to my rapport with Grace Krenikin, and I have a good working relationship with them, and I'm here to tell you a little bit about the committee and why I support the budget represented in 5053. Our members, by the way, include Don Hall from Kaiser, who is active with ARF through their 55 Alive program, Marion Owens from Glendale, who is owns a trucking company and brings that perspective as well as that of an EMT. And since I became chairman, we've added two new members, Gene Canfield, who is the president of Oregon MAD, and Mark Koberstein, who is the immediate past president of ACT, the Alliance of Community Traffic Safety Organizations, which represents 50 community traffic safety organizations in the state of Oregon. My real passion for injury prevention comes from the fact that I recognize these traffic crashes, which I don't refer to as accidents, as being largely preventable. I believe that 90% of the collisions that occur are through direct choice of behavior that can be improved or modified to reduce the tremendous human and economic cost to us as a state. The total cost of these collisions in Oregon is approximately $1.5 billion. So we're talking about some real money, and over 500 lives are lost each year. You're all familiar with the three E's of education, enforcement, and engineering. From my perspective, we are at least invested in education and enforcement. And members of our committee have already testified at this session of legislature in support of increasing the workforce for the state police. 82% of the felony arrests made in the state of Oregon are made during routine traffic stops. And so increasing law enforcement not only makes our streets safer, but also makes our communities much safer. The goals that we as an advisory group have brought to the Traffic Safety Division over the next year include increasing the safety drop-off rate in the state of Oregon from 87%, which ranks in the top five states in the nation, to 90%. Reducing the speed-related collisions from 55% to 45%, and increasing traffic enforcement workforce levels, which the way I look at it is about a 10-to-1 economic benefit in terms of dollars. During the year, the past year that I've been chair of this committee, I've had the opportunity to speak to employers of the state, to the driver's ed teachers of the state, to several service organizations, and I've had two opportunities to speak to the Transportation Commission, thanks to Grace Krenikin and their chair, Henry Hewitt. So I'm here to tell you that we have a good working relationship in this advisory group with the division. We are bridge builders, if you will, between the partnership between this public agency and private organizations. And we have, I think, a lot to be proud of in terms of how we've conducted our affairs. I'll also point out that the public service announcements, which garner over $2.5 million worth of free airtime in the state, have been very important, I think, in the state of Oregon. And I think that the agency that does that work does a great job. Brian Gard is the chair of that organization that we contract with, and I think that that's been a very effective part of the educational effort. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Doctor. Are there any questions from committee members? I'd like to personally thank you for serving on this commission or advisory board as a service to the state of Oregon, because I know of your long interest. You were involved in the seat belt and the helmet issue, and you certainly have seen firsthand the effects of people's behavior can make lasting damages permanent. And we appreciate your service, and want to thank you for that.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Doctor. I guess there's no questions for you. Claudia Howes, you're going to introduce somebody from Washington. Yes.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Claudia Howes. I'm manager of ODOT's Rail Division. Thank you for asking or giving me the privilege to introduce another special guest. Sitting next to me is Mr. Richard Claremont. He is Regional Administrator for the Federal Railroad Administration Region 8. He is located in Vancouver, Washington, and he's here particularly to address the Rail Division budget. Thank you.
Welcome. Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to appear before the subcommittee and to provide you with some input from our perspective, from the federal perspective. As Ms. Howell said, my name is Dick Claremont. I'm the Regional Administrator for the Federal Railroad Administration Northwest Region. We're headquartered in Vancouver, Washington, and made up of 8 states in the Pacific Northwest, including Oregon, which is a very important part of our region. Today I would like to, among other things, publicly compliment Oregon DOT on their rail safety program and their many contributions to rail safety. We have worked with Oregon DOT in a very seamless way to reduce fatalities, injuries, and public exposure to the grief and misery that accidents of all types result in, including rail accidents. Also, I'd like to comment on the quality of our working relationship. It is truly one of a real partnership, working together, federal and state, to resolve not only federal issues and industry issues, but those issues that are very dear to the state. Rail safety programs today continue to be a very important part of public safety. While the trend line overall shows a continuing decrease in the number of accidents, fatalities, and injuries, there is still a great need for continuing and even selectively expanding rail safety programs. And what I'd like to do is just give you a few details, and I will provide these for the record. Within the United States, there are more than 700 railroads, more than 250,000 railroad employees, 220,000 miles of track, 1.2 million freight cars, 20,000 locomotives, and for that industry, the federal government has 400 safety professionals in 47 offices throughout the country, and 150 state inspectors from 32 states. The states make up about 25% of our between 25 and 30% of the rail safety workforce. in the nation. While we have had the continuing decrease in the number of accidents, there are a number of issues lately that cause us continuing concern, and among those are the continuing spinoff of branch lines from the less or lower density branch lines of the major railroads to create short line railroads, which is a net effect of creating more railroads. So we continue to have the number of railroads in the nation growing. We've also seen a dramatic decrease in the number of employees in the railroad industry while we have seen revenue ton miles continue to increase since 1987. Both of those divergent lines bring some concern to us. What I would like to do with the chair's permission is to read into the record. I think this sums up our relationship and our thoughts on Oregon Department of Transportation Rail Safety Program. The letter to Ms. Howells from me. Pardon. Dear Ms. Howells, I'm writing to express my appreciation for the Oregon Department of Transportation's effort to advance the cause of rail safety. Your participation in the track, equipment, hazardous materials, and highway rail grade crossing safety areas are vital complements to the Federal Railroad Administration's presence in Oregon. I also commend Oregon's early recognition of the intermodal nature of the various transportation modes. In my opinion, the consolidation of state transportation programs within a Department of Transportation is an excellent model for the U.S. DOT's initiative to achieve a one DOT identity. During my service with FRA, we have made a concerted effort to establish a closer relationship with our rail safety partners. State inspectors, who constitute approximately one-third of the nation's rail safety inspection force, are FRA's primary partners in rail safety. Clearly, the State Rail Safety Participation Program is a critical component of the National Railroad Safety Assurance and Compliance process. The Oregon Department of Transportation represents one of the finest state programs that I've had the privilege to work with. Another reason for this letter is to share with you my view of arguments posed by critics of the federal-state railroad safety partnership. One such argument is that state programs duplicate federal efforts. This is not true. The roles of state and federal rail safety inspectors are clearly defined and complementary. In my experience, our state partners are dedicated, well-trained professionals who work closely with FRA to assure safe rail operations for the benefit of rail passengers, the general public, and industry employees. State participation in railroad safety regulation is a wise public option, not a requirement. I believe state support for railroad safety is no less important than state support for highway safety programs. In fact, the aims of these two transportation safety programs converge at the highway-railroad intersection. The tragic consequences of highway-rail collisions underscore the urgency of this aspect of our common safety mission. The partnership between the state of Oregon and the FRA is a mutually beneficial bond that serves the public interest. I sincerely appreciate your past rail safety efforts and count on the able assistance of the Oregon Department of Transportation in the future to safeguard our railroad transportation system. Sincerely, Nick Clark. I'm available for any questions you might have.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions? Representative Bent?
Mr. Chair, I've got a question regarding the relationship between rail safety and our inability to move more quickly on, say, high-speed rail. And when you go to Europe and Japan, you've got high-speed rail. And what I hear from people is part of the reason we can't do it is because we've got safety problems. And it takes, I guess, from downtown Portland just to Vancouver and between Tacoma and Seattle to go at, you know, snail's pace, making it non-competitive with car and airplane. And what I get told is that, well, it's basically too many crossings, or what would it take? What would it take? Is it, do we need overpasses? Do we need more gates coming down? Would it be better tracks? What would it take to get faster rail in these corridors, tough spots, yet retain the safety that we need? And how do they do it in Europe?
They're all excellent questions, and questions we could talk about for a long time. So I will.
Yeah, and there's a lot of people here, and we don't. Maybe we can talk to me later, but.
And I would.
A lot of people want to testify.
I would be happy to do that. Just briefly, though, there are a couple of major differences between our system of transportation and those in Europe and Asia. One is that our transportation systems are privately owned. That's one critical factor. Another is that the systems in other countries are very heavily subsidized, and they have provided for grade separation at crossing. And it's fundamental to a high-speed transportation system, and the safety of a high-speed transportation system is that grade crossing and grade separation. And that's it in a nutshell. I'd be happy to talk to you later.
Yeah, I'd like to talk to that.
Okay.
Representative Butler, I have a couple of questions for Mr. Cromwell here. Relative to the issue of freight movement on our rail services, which goes across purposes, and also the Pine Airline. Does the movement of our freight in the Northwest, does that slow down the issue of the high speed rail and the transportation, the public transportation portion of the rail service? And number two, do you have figures showing us what the cost per passenger was on the Pine Air before it shut down?
To respond to your last question first, no, I don't have any of those figures. My role is primarily safety, and that's how the field forces of FRA focus. Pardon me. Your first question about whether or not freight affects it, certainly intermingling or not having a dedicated line is going to at some point cause some delays. From time to time, but good traffic management systems, if put in effect, and rail capacity will accommodate, we believe, the passenger service, good passenger service. And there are some technological improvements in the works, even at this point, positive train control, positive train separation, that actually increases the capacity of rail lines, and while providing a higher level of safety. And those are the technological improvements are very important, but there exists within the system today the capacity for good passenger service.
The reason I ask about the Pine Air line is it was shut down shortly after there was a auto collision with 8 deaths, 9 deaths, I think, farm field workers crossing the track. That had nothing to do with the shutdown of it, a safety
no,
issue. It was strictly financial, wasn't it?
Yes, yes. So it was ridership. And, I'm told ridership and the profitability of the run.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right, thank you. One thing I would like to ask you, and that is the terminology has been used by the committee members that this is a high-speed rail system. Technically, it's not. It's a flow-through rail system, but I've been on the bullet train in Japan, and if you want to talk about a high-speed railroad system, go there. This is not the bullet, and I think it's important to differentiate between what we're really talking about rail service and what we're talking about real high-speed railroad. So I think it's a misnomer. It's been used to characterize this rail bill as a high-speed railroad. Do you have any comments on that?
Yes, a few comments. The U.S. Department of Transportation has established several corridors in the nation that have been designated high-speed rail corridors. The Vancouver, B.C. to Eugene corridor is one of those. In some of these cases, and there are several, there are three in the Chicago area, St. Louis, there's one in Ohio, Texas, various points around the country. And if you look at the map, of those high-speed corridors, they are they're located in such a way that in the future they could be linked to increase the overall, to accommodate higher-speed trains throughout the country. But the what is being done here, I think, is an incremental improvement. The attempt is there to make an incremental improvement to improve the speed of rail passenger service in the country. The Northeast Corridor is going to 150 miles an hour. That is dedicated right-of-way, however, and it is completely grade-separated, which makes a tremendous difference in the ability to do that. They also aren't dealing with curvature of the lines and some of those other things that impact the train's ability to operate at higher speeds. So there are a lot of things that go into this process, but we are moving in that direction. And it's being done without the size subsidies, again, or public ownership of the rail lines that we see in the other countries.
Well, Chair, I came to this process 25 years ago. There was a senator from Eugene by the name of George Wingard that proposed taking the 95 corridor all the way from Medford and Ashland there to Vancouver, British Columbia, going right up the middle of the freeway with a monorail system, and it would have ports and intersections where people could park and ride. He was laughed out of the building. Now we're basically back to that same concept.
That's correct, and within the U.S. Department of Transportation, as within the Oregon Department of Transportation, there is a very strong move to work together to make it to integrate transportation systems, and that's the focus of Secretary Slater at this time, to integrate transportation systems in these kinds of manners to make them not only convenient but effective, make them fast.
Thank you very much. Typically, what they do at this point is there's some legislators here, and I'd like to ask them to momentarily wait. I have one person who's under the weather and would like to get back home, possibly even go to bed because of the flu. Kurt Laird, the Amtrak.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Hey.
And the members of the committee. My name is Kurt Laird, and I'm the general manager of Amtrak West Park Lines in the Pacific Northwest. This includes the Cascades train, which travels from Eugene to Portland, Seattle, and into Vancouver, British Columbia. I'm proud to say that the Cascades is known nationwide as one of Amtrak's most successful corridor services, thanks in large part to the partnerships that helped establish these services. Amtrak West supports Senator Len Hammond's bill, SB 1051, which provides $14 million for rail services in Oregon over the next biennium. These funds would continue the existing successful service at another frequency to allow for better and more convenient service for Oregonians and expand the throughway buses, allowing Oregonians to take the bus to the train to acquire train fit for the added frequency. Thank you. I'm here today to talk briefly about the service, about Amtrak's commitment to the corridor, and the need for continued partnership support, particularly in Oregon. As I mentioned, Amtrak is proud of the Cascades service, in part because of its partnership with Oregon, Washington State, and British Columbia. As a result in increased ridership, increased revenues, and better service to the region's residents and its visitors. Amtrak has invested some $90 million since the inception of the Pacific Northwest Rail Corridor service in 1993. The state of Washington has committed more than $120 million to develop its portion of the Pacific Northwest Rail Corridor, including the purchase of two train sets totaling over $20 million. British Columbia is on the verge of approving a $20 million plus agreement for contributions to the corridor. In the current biennium, the state of Oregon has provided $4 million for operations. These funds have been a proven investment. Ridership in the Pacific Northwest Rail Corridor has grown from over 226,000 in the calendar year 1993 to nearly 550,000 in 1998, an increase of 143%. The Oregon-sponsored Portland-Eugene rail extension of the Amtrak Cascades has reported nearly a 20% ridership increase since the first 12 months of rail service in Oregon, beginning in 1994. This growth has been continuous despite the fact that there has been no increase in rail service since 1994 along the Oregon-sponsored segment of the Amtrak Cascades. including the Oregon-sponsored Amtrak 3 Motor Coach Network, the number of passengers riding in the Eugene-Portland portion of the corridor during 1998 increased by 27% compared to the previous year and nearly 60% since the first 12 months of corridor service. The Portland station is ranked the 15th busiest station out of the top 300 stations in the Amtrak system, with over 160,000 passengers beginning or ending their travel in Oregon. The success does not need to stop in 1999. As the partnership commitment continues, a recent study found that the ridership on the corridor continued to dramatically increase. For 2003, ridership to the Oregon segment of the corridor is estimated to grow from the current 80,000 passengers annually to 387,000 passengers annually. How can this happen? Well, faster trains and reduced travel time, increased frequencies, better fare structures bring better service to the customers and bring in more riders. According to this study, as many as 5 round-trip trains per day could be supported within the Willamette Valley. This is why Amtrak is committed to the corridor. We have seen and will continue to see success, but we cannot do this without state support. Let me tell you why. Some of you know that Amtrak is under a commitment to Congress that beginning in 2003, Amtrak must be free of federal operating support, closing a significant operating gap of some $300 to $400 million. If Amtrak does not succeed in this legal mandate, Congress has the authority to liquidate Amtrak. If that task seems rather daunting, you're right. However, Amtrak's National Strategic Business Plan has mapped out a way to get there, and Amtrak is committed to our customers and to our success. The Strategic Business Plan focuses on 5 key strategies that will create a more modern national rail system based on business-oriented and market-based outcomes. The Cascade service fits well into these key strategies. Let me briefly explain. First, we'll need to build a market-based network. The Cascade train serves an economic corridor, the I-5 corridor, focused on population densities. People are riding the Cascades because it goes where people want to go, in comfort, without battling the growing congestion on the highways and in the airports. Second, we will develop corridor services. Clearly, the current projected ridership growth of the Cascades meets this strategy. Third, we will develop consistent quality service to be more customer-focused and to provide a world-class travel experience. The Cascade service receives among the highest ratings in Amtrak's customer satisfaction surveys every year. Fourth, we'll revitalize the Amtrak brand. Our effort to run European-style trains in the corridor is doing more to transform what the customer thinks of the new Amtrak and of its partnerships with the state than anything else. The public knows our face is changing, and our partners benefit from that as well. Fifth, we'll maximize public and private partnerships. While we're diversifying our revenue base to bring in more private dollars to programs like Mail and Express, state partnerships are critical. I must also say that state partnerships are critical to the federal government in deciding where to allocate the growing budgets for high-speed rail corridors nationwide. This is where Oregon comes in. If Oregon fails to provide the funding to continue and grow the service, there will be no Cascades train service in the state. Amtrak will be forced to halt the service in the corridor come this July 1st because Amtrak will be unable to absorb the cost of continuing Oregon's portion of the Cascades service. This will potentially affect 80,000 Oregonians annually. They'll have to find other means of travel, which will likely be a flood of cars on the highways clogging already existing roads. In addition, Oregon will lose the ability to compete for high-speed rail federal funding. The Pacific Northwest Rail Corridor is one of the 5 original high-speed rail corridors designated by Congress in 1991. Interest in high-speed rail corridors is booming across the country. The Northwest must now compete with 10 other designated corridors in the region. The Federal Railroad Administration will consider state support in making its funding decisions. Oregon must demonstrate a solid commitment to passenger rail to be able to successfully compete against the other states, which are committing state funds for these corridors. There is a potential for $20 million in federal dollars for speed and safety improvements in the Willamette Valley as state support for the program continues. In summary, Amtrak is committed to the corridor, and Oregon's portion of the corridor, if Oregon is committed to also to the corridor. We have witnessed the success of this corridor and expect the success to continue, but Amtrak will have to halt service if Oregon does not fund its portion of the corridor. We obviously do not want this to happen. That's why we believe Senator Hannon's bill to provide $14 million for the rail program is important. Thank you for allowing me to testify today, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Questions by committee members. Representative Schrader.
You indicated at one point that the federal government's bailing out of Amtrak's support by 2003. Does that include the matching funds that are going with the $14 million
were the reduction in the federal operating it's purely operating dollars. It is not capital dollars that are obviously required in order to build the infrastructure and purchase train sets and things that are needed. So we expect that there will still be a capital contribution from the federal level.
Yes.
then you also indicated then to actually support the operating portion of it, you're going to be, two questions, I guess. There's no federal dollars in that now. And two, you have a copy of your market study to show how you're going to be self-supporting in the future.
We can certainly provide that information to you. The Seattle to Eugene train right now is subsidized by Amtrak on the Seattle to Portland section entirely. It is not a Washington State. Run European-style trains in the corridors, doing more to transform what the customer thinks of the new Amtrak and of its partnerships with the states than anything else. The public knows our pace is changing, and our partners benefit from that as well. Fifth, we'll maximize public and private partnerships. While we are diversifying our revenue base to bring in more private dollars through programs like Mail and Express, state partnerships are critical. I must also say that state partnerships are critical to the federal government in deciding where to allocate the growing budget for high-speed rail corridors nationwide. This is where Oregon comes in. If Oregon fails to provide the funding to continue and grow the service, there will be no Cascade train service in the state. Amtrak will be forced to halt the service in the corridor come this July 1st because Amtrak will be unable to absorb the cost of continuing Oregon's portion of the Cascade service. This will potentially affect 80,000 Oregonians annually. They'll have to find other means of travel, which will likely be a flood of cars on the highways clogging already existing roads. In addition, Oregon will lose the ability to compete for high-speed rail federal funding. The Pacific Northwest Rail Corridor is one of the five original high-speed rail corridors designated by Congress in 1991. Interest in high-speed rail corridors is booming across the country. The Northwest must now compete with 10 other designated corridors in the region. The Federal Railroad Administration will consider state support in making its funding decisions. Oregon must demonstrate a solid commitment to passenger rail to be able to successfully compete against the other states, which are committing state funds for these corridors. There is a potential for $20 million in federal dollars for speed and safety improvements in the Willamette Valley as state support for the program continues. In summary, Amtrak is committed to the corridor, and Oregon's portion of the corridor, if Oregon is committed to also to the corridor. We have witnessed the success of this corridor and expect the success to continue, but Amtrak will have to halt service if Oregon does not fund its portion of the corridor. We obviously do not want this to happen. That's why we believe Senator Hannon's bill to provide $14 million for the rail program is important. Thank you for allowing me to testify today, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Questions by committee members. Representative Schrader.
You indicated at one point that the federal government's bailing out of Amtrak's 4-5-2003. Does that include the matching funds that are going with the $14 million?
reduction in the federal operating is purely operating dollars. It is not capital dollars that are obviously required in order to build the infrastructure and purchase train sets and things that are needed. So we expect that there will still be a capital contribution from the federal level.
Yes.
And you also indicated then to actually support the operating portion of it, you're going to be, two questions, I guess. There's no federal dollars in that now. And two, you have a copy of your market study to show how you're going to be self-supporting in the future.
We can certainly provide that information to you. The Seattle to Eugene train right now is subsidized by Amtrak on the Seattle to Portland section entirely. It is not a Washington State supported train and is part of Amtrak's system, route system. So to some degree, there is still operating support on federal level through Amtrak dollars in order to keep this train running. The state of Oregon is only funding the portion between Portland and Eugene at present.
Do we have the information on how much dollars that is?
For the Portland to Eugene segment, the current cost of the train is $3.6 million. That's broken down into $1.1 million in revenue from food and ticket revenue, $500,000 contribution from Amtrak, and a $2 million contribution from the state of Oregon.
Okay, Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Laird, I'm from Eastern Oregon. District 60 represents about a third of the landmass of this state. I have asked a question of Representative Schrader relative to how easy it is once we get from Eastern Oregon to the valley here to go ahead and utilize the services and be able to arrive in Portland, do we have the interconnecting lines around the various metropolitan areas that would accommodate passengers coming from Eastern Oregon?
So right now, the only rail service in the state of Oregon is the I-5 corridor service to Eugene. There, as you well know, there is no Pioneer route anymore that serves the eastern part of the state. The closest we get is on the Washington-Columbia Riverside, is the operation of the Empire Building, which could bring people potentially into Portland.
But the infrastructure that would accommodate local ridership, once people from Eastern Oregon were to arrive, say, in Eugene or Medford or at some point to be able to interconnect, and then get to Portland, the local transportation in Portland would accommodate those people, and we've got to train them not to drive their cars to Portland first, in other words. Do you feel that the infrastructure is in place to accommodate the local ridership once people get off of the trains in these metropolitan areas?
I think there's obviously room for improvement in those areas, but we've come a long way in helping to design our newer stations and refurbishing older stations to accommodate that kind of intermobility of people once they get to a location.
Mr. Chairman, just a comment. Being from Eastern Oregon, it would, you know, as a person would think that this would be something that I'd be opposed to, but I want you to know that I'm very much in favor of it. It's an issue that we've got to resolve in order to accommodate the other 59 districts in this state, so that we can go ahead and tie in to a good system and be able to utilize it. So, we don't have the Pioneer, as Mr. Laird has alluded to. It's gone. We don't have any rail system of our own. As a matter of fact, there are no public transportation systems anywhere within my district at this particular point, except that there is a bus that comes through from Salt Lake through Ontario. So that's the only place, just one town in my district, that serves throughout this one-third of the entire state of Oregon.
Well, I don't want you to be alone in your grief, but Southern Oregon is the second largest urban center in the state of Oregon. Has no access to rail, has no direct airplane flights to the state capital in Oregon, limited bus support. So if you want to grieve over Eastern Oregon, I can give you plenty to grieve about Southern Oregon.
But I think we both agree, though, that it's important that this be in place so that when we make the effort to come this far, then it is in place and we can encourage our constituents to utilize the service.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'll send it to you.
Thank you. Mr. Mayor, I have two questions. One is, I have a lot of constituents who love the train ride. They feel that the Amtrak schedule is not user-friendly because you can start to go to work in the morning and you can't come back by a 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock train. You have to wait till 9 o'clock in the evening to take the train. So my first question is, why don't you have a schedule that's more suitable for people's schedule instead of going by train and have to come home by bus? Don't you have a better schedule?
The existing schedule is driven in large part by the availability of equipment. With the DOT's plan, in order to add more frequencies and purchase a train set, those types of things will be addressed. It's very difficult with one train to fit the needs of all people, and that's obviously where we are right now, given the equipment that we have available to operate the service.
Mm-hmm. I have a second question, which is, I understand there's a lot of subsidy to fund this program, so can you tell us what percentage is funded by FAIR and what percentage is funded by public funds?
Of the total cost between Portland and Eugene is $3.6 million. $1.1 is subsidized by the fare-paying passenger, either in terms of food and beverage revenue or in tickets. $2 million is paid for by Oregon Department of Transportation, and $500,000 is paid by Amtrak.
So $2.5 million public funds and $1.1 million by fare. So
yes,
two-thirds is subsidy by public funds. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Schrader?
Just a,
when you get that summary of the market study, I assume that's going to show how that's going to change somewhat. And then also curious as to if the federal portion, the point, you know, the $500,000 is going away, I assume that either the market or Oregon's going to be picking that up. And then what the future obligation for operating costs were. If we could get, not right now, but get the information.
The recent ridership study that has just come out for the Volpe Institute will help deal with some of those questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much.
Senator Cecile and Representative Przewalski, do you want to come up with the mayor of Eugene, Jim Thorne? I apologize, we had to take you out of order, but we want you to come up and share your thoughts and feelings with us. Welcome, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Senator.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Susan Castillo, State Senator for District 20, Eugene. First of all, I'd like to just start by recognizing and thanking you, Mr. Chair, for your leadership on this issue. The residents of Eugene, who are very, very supportive of the passenger rail program that we have in our state, very much appreciate your leadership on this issue and your help on this. I have something that I'm sharing with you today. It's getting passed out right now, and basically what it is a copy of the recently passed appropriation from the state of Washington for the corridor, and the appropriation is $116.6 million for the next biennium. And in the language of the appropriation, there is a budget note, and I wanted to call your attention to that budget note, which says no appropriation in this section may be used to fund rail passenger service south of Portland, Oregon. And, you know, our friends up north have been urging us to be stronger partners in our investments in the corridor, and I think they are very definitely sending us a message in this budget note, encouraging us to step up and join them. We have been enjoying the benefits of their very heavy investments in the corridor and are looking at us to step up and join them in that investment. I did want to say to Representative Butler, I very much appreciate your support and would like to offer my help to you in working to get that pioneer up and ready. It would be great if we could do that, and I'd love to work with you on that one. I just would like to encourage all of you, as you are making very difficult budget decisions that face us this session, to please give serious consideration to the $14 million request for the high-speed rail corridor. I know we call it high-speed. It is not high-speed yet, but that is the vision for the corridor. We know that ridership, as you just heard, it is a new way that people are looking to for transportation throughout our state and throughout our region, actually, and is very much a part of creating a balanced transportation system in this whole region. I have attended a couple different conferences in the Seattle area, which you'll be hearing more about the Cascadia and the Discovery Institute in a little bit, but from someone else who is here to testify from the state of Washington. But as I've attended those conferences, people from all over our region have been there to talk about the excitement around the developments of this corridor and what it means to the economy of our region. And we know that people all around this country are looking to see what we are doing in our investments here as there is excitement in the various corridors that are underway and in development. And we really do have an opportunity here to capitalize on the investments that the federal government is standing there waiting to help us with. If we step up and say, yes, we'll make our share of investment in this corridor and be able to capitalize on those federal dollars that are available. So I know there are many others here to talk in support of this, and but I mostly wanted to this morning to just highlight what the state of Washington continues to do in their investments and their encouragement to us to step up and be good partners in this. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and I also want to thank you for your leadership in this issue, because you've certainly been working very hard this session, and both you and Representative Przewalski, and we appreciate your help and your guidance. So, Representative?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee members, I also appreciate the opportunity to be before you today, and I'm here only to, fortify what you will be hearing from other people as well as what you've heard from the Senator. I personally believe the minimum of $14 million is the bottom line. We really are playing catch-up, and it's kind of amazing since 1995 when I took office to see what the state of Washington has been doing in their portion of the corridors. It's really important for us to realize what this means, and I can only tell you from my experience in 1995, I used the rail service as my primary mode of transportation between Eugene and Salem. As many of you know, that when I'm up here, I do use a bicycle to move back and forth here in Salem. And so I found that to be an appropriate way. One of the things I really was hoping for and what is now currently happening within this quarter is we actually have trains that have the ability to have bikes brought on without being boxed. And the reason you may ask why is that important is because one of the things that I've realized is that there are a lot of people that come into our region who want to have vacation time and be able to do it without being in a vehicle. And this is a possibility that runs not only from Eugene but all the way up to Vancouver, Vancouver, B.C., where you can, in fact, actually not have to have a vehicle, meaning an automobile, to actually take a vacation if you so desire. And you can actually tie into many different other rail services, including the Canadian, to go into the Banff and Jasper area and never need to have an automobile. This is just one portion, but I think the other, and that is that's what I call part of the fringe benefits of developing a system that you have people wanting to come and use. But clearly, Oregonians need this system for their own use, besides for recreation and pleasure, but also for travel, for business. What we've seen on I-5 over the last 4 years is just an increase of more and more traffic. And as Senator, as Representative Butler mentioned, we need to make certain that we have connections happening from outside of the corridor area. I'm very pleased to see that Amtrak, with the Department of Transportation for Oregon, have in fact worked together in trying to bring in people from outside of the valley into being able to connect to the train service now by use of buses. As Senator Cecile said, with Representative Butler, I think the Pioneer is one of those tragedies that unfortunately has occurred, and we need to bring it back because I clearly see the need to have rail service not only in this corridor that we're discussing today, but in other portions, and I think the Gorge area and out to Eastern Oregon is a very significant component to be able to tie people in so they will not have to drive into the major hubs to access these services. The transportation connection of systems, I think one of the things that we have to also realize is, as Representative Butler questioned, once you get someone to a specific city or hub, what are they going to do at that point? And I know from my discussions with people within the Portland area that they're actually looking to have other interconnections with other transportation systems. So beyond being within the metroplex of Portland, for people who want to use the international airport there, well, they'll be able to access through train to the airport and be able to utilize the service that way. And Senator, you brought up the questions and issues regarding the scheduling. I can tell you that I, from my experience in 1995 and the times I've used it since then, realized that the train that we have starting in Eugene at 6 in the morning is very appropriate for people who are wanting to use it for business. But the unfortunate part is that you are limited to using the via through bus service to get back to your home destination at this point. And clearly what we need is to make the investment of funds to bring more trains on line so they will in fact be able to bring in more opportunity and access. And that's where we're going to see the ridership increase. And all we have to do is look to the north of us, to Washington State, and see based on their investment how their ridership continues to increase greater and greater. And I believe that we will in fact be able to reach that threshold where trains will be a viable alternative to the motor vehicle for those individuals who want to use it. Not everyone is going to want to, but the reality is the more people we have using alternative forms of transportation, the less demand and needs we have on our existing infrastructure of our transportation system. So I also would like to thank the Chair for your leadership for bringing this matter before us and giving us an opportunity to have the open debate. Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, welcome.
Thank you very much, Senator. Chairman Hannon, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jim Torrey, and I'm the mayor of the city of Eugene. The city of Eugene supports the Oregon Department of Transportation's efforts to maintain a high level of passenger rail service in Oregon. We urge you to include adequate funding to keep Oregon and the Willamette Valley part of the Northwest higher speed rail corridor. That's not what I was going to say originally, Senator, but I This includes continued state funding for interstate rail service and expanded bus service, as well as adequate funding for senior and disabled transportation needs. I remember when Senator Wingard was talking about that transportation corridor from California to Washington. And I also remember, if you can believe this, people in Eugene thought that was too futuristic, if you can believe that. That is not the case any longer. The question, though, is will this higher-speed rail system run through Oregon or simply stop in Portland? I have a lot of respect for the things that the people in Portland are doing, but frankly, we do have a responsibility to the others in the state of Oregon, and that can sound somewhat selfish in light of the fact that the Cascadia line stops in Eugene. But I'm very supportive of doing whatever we can throughout the state of Oregon to allow us to connect to the system and to make available, as representative and the senator have indicated, services to Eastern Oregon. One of my good friends from Eastern Oregon is Mayor Roberts from Enterprise. And she and I have had a lot of discussion about the importance of this high-speed rail system. And she supports this. And she recognizes that it will have minimum support probably from many of her constituents. But she sees the needs of a combined effort to deal with our transportation issues. The $14 million is a lot of money. In comparison to what the state of Washington is providing, it may pale in comparison. But we understand how tough dollars are coming in this legislative session. Without this $14 million, though, I'm afraid that we're going to be at the bottom of the list of priorities when it comes to federal funding and when it comes to the ability of Amtrak to continue to provide services for us. We have a number of issues at stake here, including recent federal funding that is available to redevelop and refurbish the Salem, Albany, and Eugene Amtrak stations. And Representative Butler, I want to point out to you right now, you have a very good quarterback from your area of the state of Oregon that most likely will be the starting quarterback for the University of Oregon next year. I would hope everybody would come up I-84, get on the train, come down to Eugene. When they get off the train in Eugene, we're working. In fact, we had a meeting last night with the Lane Transit Board. We are putting together a shuttle system that will stop at the train station, go to our transit center, and be able to get you to either the football facility or the basketball facility or the hospital or the University of Oregon or the Lane County Fairgrounds. So we understand what you're saying, and I really appreciate your comments as a person from Eastern Oregon recognizing the need for these services. Furthermore, the discontinuation of service could deprive Oregon businesses of economic benefit from federal investment in construction and from the purchase of products and services for the operation of this service. Train ridership between Portland and Eugene has more than quadrupled since 1993. It is a popular option for college students from the northern end of the state of Oregon coming to the Eugene area and including those areas like Klamath Falls, where people come from that area to our train station. The development of express bus connections can extend the train option to citizens of many communities in southern, eastern, and coastal Oregon. It's not perfect, but there is an opportunity to have some connection there. To leverage the private investments by Union Pacific and the federal dollars available, the 1999 legislature hopefully will approve the $14 million rail package. At a minimum, it is a good return on the private and federal investments that have been made regardless of the social and economic benefit it brings. I urge you to support the passenger rail proposal. Thank you for your time and consideration. And one final thing I would point out, having been a baseball and a softball coach for many years in Eugene and having been beaten by the people from the southern Oregon area, the Mariners need pitching. Wouldn't it be great if we could get those people on the train in Eugene, drop them off in Seattle, and they could be home the next day to go to work and doing the things they normally do? Junior Griffey can't win this championship all by himself. Let's send some people from Oregon on the train to Seattle.
Mr. Mayor, I want to thank you. There's a lot of people from Medford that like to go to a destination in Eugene, but they don't have access to rail transportation. So being the equal opportunity employer that we are, Clark Howell's probably seems the same feeling as OSU, so we're not taking sides.
Didn't you have a bill to bring duck games down to Ashland?
I moved the whole damn campus.
Whoa! Mr. Chairman.
Senator Yee.
I would like Mr. Mayor to answer my concern that we're trying to get the best return out of the dollars we invest. But when we invest in the train, two-thirds of it is paid by the public and one-third is paid by the fare. So I want to hear what is your justification for the investment.
Well, if you've been to Eugene recently, one of the things you'll see is we're spending almost $30 million on an arterial called the Ferry Street Bridge Corridor. And we have on that arterial alone something like 70,000 people per day that are going to be using that arterial. And when we get finished with this three-year project, we are going to immediately start on additional transportation issues because we know that our roads are going to be clogged even more than they are today. I think that the relationship that we have in Eugene for an increased traffic is similar to the relationship that will exist in the state of Oregon. We need to find alternative ways to move people. And if we have to invest in the front end to make that a reality, we would like to be able to pay for ourselves immediately, but nothing of this magnitude in any part of the country or in any part of the world without some initial investment. And I look at this as an investment into our transportation future, and that will allow us, frankly, to take some of the dollars that we might otherwise have put on the Interstate 5 corridor and be able to deal with issues that are in existence right now in eastern Oregon on the Oregon coast and in southern Oregon. We just have to be able to advance and fund some new and enhanced programs other than just the roadbed. And I'm a strong believer in the fact that we're going to have cars forever. But this is one way to reduce some of that impact. And as the representative said, we have people who can come from Canada, for example, and get off the train in Eugene and become a tourist-oriented activity, and we can provide some transportation options right in our own city that are not automobile-related. I know that doesn't answer the question as to how it pays for itself, but if we can get it started, I think that we will pay benefits to ourselves in the future. I promised a representative of the Department of Transportation I will not do this after I come back. The city of Eugene has a sister city relationship with a Japanese city, and I'm leaving Saturday morning to Japan. Now, I hate it when people come back from Europe and say, I rode this train, and why don't you guys do this for us? But I'm not there yet, okay? So I'm going to assume that 100 miles an hour on a train is going to be a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. But I will bet that that country that uses that type of transportation had to invest in advance to make it the quality of transportation that it is today. And that's the only answer I have for that, Senator. Mm-hmm.
And next question.
Yes, please.
Mm-hmm. Well, in Japan, they have the population to pay for all the necessary investments. Do you have any ideas how to increase ridership for the train?
One of the ways I believe that we can increase ridership is funding like this will allow us to add another train. Adding, and you brought up the issue yourself.
Mm-hmm.
If it were more user-friendly, more people would, in fact, use it. And the early train, as the representative pointed out, getting out of Eugene at 6 is not that bad. Having to ride the bus back is a problem. If we are able to add the additional train, I think that that will increase the usage. And if I'm sure all of you have been to Washington, D.C. and used the metro system. The first time I went to Washington, D.C., I rented a car. The second time, I would not even have considered renting the car because it is much more efficient to use the system. And we just have to make it as user-friendly as we can within the confines of the dollars we have available. But one of the ways would be to increase the number of trips and increase the speed and make it so somebody says, wait a minute, I can get to the airport in Portland for pretty much the same time length as it takes me to drive. And I know this isn't an airlines issue, but last week we had some people from the FAA in Eugene talking about the fact that we probably are not going to get another major airline to come into Eugene. Many people from Eugene today drive to Portland to save $200 and $300 a ticket and get on your out of your Portland airport. And I know you're from Albany, but we can expand our abilities for our people to take advantage of some even lower fares in Portland. And so I don't have all of the answers, but I do think we would not be making a wise decision if we backed away from the options that are available to us, and this is one of the options that I see.
Thank you very much.
I just wanted to make one other point here, and that is that part of the package in the request, as you know, and I just wanted to point this out for Representative Butler, is that there is an attempt in this appropriation to extend service to other parts of the state, and so the package does include extending bus connections to Albany, Corvallis, and Newport. There would be 4 daily runs there. From Eugene, Medford to Klamath Falls, 1 daily round trip there, and then from the Willamette Valley to Burns and Boise, there would be 3 round trips weekly there in an effort to reach out and try and help more people have access to that train corridor. So I just wanted to make that point. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And they say the word doesn't travel fast in this building. I just briefly talked about moving the University of Oregon to Ashland. The treasure of the University of Oregon has arrived.
Had to invest in advance to make it the quality of transportation that it is today. And that's the only answer I have for that, Senator.
Mm-hmm. And next question.
Yes, please.
Mm-hmm. Well, in Japan, they have the population to pay for all the necessary investments. Do you have any ideas how to increase ridership for the train?
One of the ways I believe that we can increase ridership is funding like this will allow us to add another train. Adding it, and you brought up the issue yourself. If it were more user-friendly, more people would, in fact, use it. And the early train, as the representative pointed out, getting out of Eugene at 6 is not that bad. Having to ride the bus back is a problem. If we are able to add the additional train, I think that that will increase the usage. And if I'm sure all of you have been to Washington, D.C. and used the metro system. The first time I went to Washington, D.C., I rented a car. The second time, I would not even have considered renting a car because it is much more efficient to use the system. And we just have to make it as user-friendly as we can within the confines of the dollars we have available. But one of the ways would be to increase the number of trips and increase the speed and make it so somebody says, wait a minute, I can get to the airport in Portland for pretty much the same in the same time length as it takes me to drive. And I know this isn't an airlines issue, but last week we had some people from the FAA in Eugene talking about the fact that we probably are not going to get another major airline to come into Eugene. Many people from Eugene today drive to Portland to save $200 and $300 a ticket and get on your out of your Portland airport. And I know you're from Albany, but we can expand our abilities for our people to take advantage of some even lower fares in Portland. And so I don't have all of the answers, but I do think we would not be making a wise decision if we backed away from the options that are available to us, and this is one of the options that I see.
Thank you very much.
I just wanted to make one other point here, and that is that part of the package in the request, as you know, and I just wanted to point this out for Representative Butler, is that there is an attempt in this appropriation to extend service to other parts of the state, and so the package does include extending bus connections to Albany, Corvallis, and Newport. There would be 4 daily runs there from Eugene, Medford to Klamath Falls, 1 daily round trip there, and then from the Willamette Valley to Burns and Boise, there would be 3 round trips weekly there in an effort to reach out and try and help more people have access to that train corridor. So I just wanted to make that point. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And they say the word doesn't travel fast in this building. I just briefly talked about moving the University of Oregon to Ashland. The treasure of the University of Oregon has arrived. Mr. President, Dave Frommeyer. I was just being a little frivolous when I made that statement. Please accept my sincere.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Dave Fonemeyer, President of the University of Oregon, appearing in my private capacity, although the chair well knows that I grew up in Medford and I had very mixed emotions about the issue you just raised. Let me take exactly 90 seconds of the committee's time simply to testify as a satisfied and indeed enthusiastic user of rail transportation. For the first year that I was Attorney General, now many more years ago perhaps than I care to remember, we had the light rail experiment. And I faithfully rode that train every day back and forth from Eugene to Salem, arriving with a spring in my step about 7:45, walking a block and a half to my office where I was Attorney General, already having done almost all of my morning's work and dictated at least 5 or 10 letters or memos. The train stopped Senator Yee in your community, where another 5 or 10 people regularly took it. And it is not only an extraordinarily civilized way to travel, it's a way that could really relieve the freeway traffic, which I just encountered again this morning. And I have to tell you that in the last 20 years commuting up and down I-5 on various government assignments, it's gone from a very simple trip to one that's really quite hazardous, and where the volume of traffic, especially trucks, will only increase. And then the historian in me forces me back to look at the schedules of the trains that served Eugene, Portland, in fact, the entire I-5 corridor back in 1910. You could actually get from Portland to Eugene faster by train in 1910 than you can do it by automobile now. That has something to do probably with the weight of the trains and what the tracks could take. But it clearly shows you that our predecessors may have been wiser about how to move people and goods, but especially people, than we have been now. It's not only they could get there faster. They had 5 trains a day. They could do that. I invite you to look at some of the timetables of the historical society. Well, I'm a satisfied user. I'm not here to testify that there's a magic way to solve all of the financial issues. But as one who's traveled by train not only here but in Japan and in Europe, I can assure you that this is one of the answers that has to be in our long-term planning.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions of the President?
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. President. There's 2 individuals who have indicated interest in testifying as early as possible. They're both handicapped, Donna Crawford and Helen Beeson. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Donna Crawford, and I'll let Helen introduce herself later. Go ahead. This is Helen Beffen. I run a foster home in Clackamas County, and Helen is has been living with me for over 20 years. When I first met Helen, she was living at home with an elderly father and a housekeeper, and hadn't been out in the community very much at all. The way that I met her is that I started providing transportation for her to get to a work activity center in Portland. I was already providing rides for other people, and since then, of course, we know that Clackamas County and Multnomah County and Washington County have been served somewhat adequately by TriMet. As Representative Schrader will attest, there's still a lot of area in Clackamas County where we don't have adequate service. Helen is 75 years old now. And goes to work every day still and uses Lyft service. Helen loves going to work. She tells me every day when she comes home from work, wonderful day. She had a great day at work. If transportation wasn't available, she probably would not be still going to work and reaping the benefits of being out in the community. We think things like the MAX line are wonderful. We think that this buses are wonderful. This train that is now totally accessible is wonderful. Because there are many more Helens out there than just the one we have sitting here representing many. The need is real to be able to participate in life. Helen uses transportation to go visit family. She uses transportation to go to Special Olympics. And if she was able to get back and forth from Portland to the coast and Portland to Bend area, she could be also visiting with family. But those are things that aren't in place yet. And we certainly would encourage you to develop programs in transportation that would help people to be able to do those things that they can't at the moment do.
Thank you very much. Are there questions? If not, thank you very much for being here today.
Senator, I'd like to know what kind of work Helen does at this time.
She works. You want to tell them where you work? She works for Port City Development Center in Portland. And not only do they have a work program, but they also have what they call an alternative to employment program, where Helen goes sometimes when she chooses, and they do many things. They do an art program. They've had a couple of shows showing their various artists. If you go to the juvenile correction, the new juvenile correction hall in Multnomah County, they've done the glass doors, the etching on the glass for the glass doors. And Helen has two or three blocks in that exhibit.
Okay.
They do good work.
Okay. Thank you very much, both of you.
Thank you.
We're now going to try to take those that have come the furthest and accommodate them. We have approximately 45 minutes left till the conclusion of our hearing today, but we'd like to take those that have come the farthest. Deb, is it Craker? Craker, if you'd come forward. And Lloyd Flem, if you'd come forward. Are you here with several people from Central Oregon?
It's me.
It's you, okay. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself.
Well, good morning, Mr. Chairman and committee members. I'm Deb Craker. I'm the Executive Director for Central Oregon Council on Aging. And I just wanted to come and share some information about Central Oregon Council on Aging and what we do in the Tri-County area, Crook, Jefferson, and Deschutes counties. We are under the guidelines of the Older American Act dollars. I'm sure you've all heard of those. We provide some wonderful services for seniors 60-plus, plus the disabled. The one area I wanted to focus on primarily today was the Dial-A-Ride program that we have, and it is funded through STF Funds, United Way, Cigarette Tax, Older American Act dollars, and rider donations. We have approximately 400 undocumented folks that we serve in communities that we have vans are Madras, Redmond, Sisters, and Lapine. We have six vans. One of the vans is driven by a volunteer. The other five are paid minimum wage to take seniors. Some are 5 days a week. In Redmond, we have Madras only has 3 days a week, Lapine only 3 days a week, and Sisters only 1 day a week, and then twice a month to Bend. So far this year, we've provided over 18,000 one-way trips for our communities. We have volunteers through an interfaith volunteer caregiver program that has provided over 75,000 escort miles. And these are all done by volunteers in our community. And what they do is they take folks to doctor's appointments, pharmacy, meal sites, job opportunities, volunteer job opportunities, educational seminars, things to keep them healthy and aware of what's available to them in Oregon and in Central Oregon so to make their life a better quality of life. Maintains their good health, their good humor, and they are more productive citizens, of course, because we can get them where they need to go. One of our areas that we are lacking in is, inner city type transportation. Currently, we only can go to Van from Madras one time a week, and Redmond hooks a ride with those folks who come in from Madras. They piggyback all the way to Bend, and those folks are headed to doctor's appointments primarily. Lapine is the same thing. They are in the southern part of Central Oregon, and they only get to Bend one time a month, or week, excuse me. Even though we have some of these coordinated services, we are still missing folks. They fall through the cracks, and there's probably 50 to 60 folks a week that we cannot help because our program is already too full. They have to make reservations in order to participate in the Dial-A-Ride program. The hours are too short. We're not available when they want service, which is sometimes in the evenings, in late afternoons, to go to doctor's appointments, or early, early mornings. So they need to go to do their shopping and whatnot because it's the less traffic and they are less inhibited by folks around them. We are constrained with a 5-mile radius generally within our community, so they can't go any further than 5 miles around the city. And at that point is when we try to use our supplement escort service with our volunteers. In our interfaith volunteer caregivers, we have 192 volunteers that come primarily to us from the churches in the communities. And they last year provided over 12,000 hours worth of service to folks in our community, as well as 75,000 miles of escort service. We also work with state agencies to help us do some of our work. And one of the volunteer escort folks over there is the Community Partnership Team. They themselves provide 20,000 miles of service, volunteer service a month, and 36,000 a year in the Kirk and Jefferson counties. We're hoping to get additional funding for transportation, and what we would like to do with those dollars is to make a good effort in coordinating the existing services that are currently in place, expand each of our community's day-to-day hour services, and expand to weekend services so folks who cannot get to church on Sundays can do that, and folks who'd like to participate in activities that are going on the weekends on Saturdays, that they can address those as well. Just real quickly, one of the most recent statistics I've received for Deschutes County is that the 85-plus population has grown 64% in the last 7 years, and the 70-plus population has grown 29%. So this is going to be requiring more services, and the seniors are asking now, so we want to plan for them. And thank you very much. I appreciate you letting me take this time.
Thank you very much. Questions? Mr. Chair. Oh, it's in there then.
Thank you. Why are senior citizens growing so fast? They are living longer and healthier. And that the what's the main? It's good, but it costs more.
Eating better, happier. Senator Hammond and Senator Lynn, the seniors are growing to live longer because of medical advances, and they just are living better. They're living longer. People are taking care of them better. They have more activities that they can stay involved in, so it makes them feel like they're worthwhile, and so it makes them happier and healthier, so they do live longer.
So, Mr. Shah, they are talking about disabled senior citizens mostly?
You know, it's amazing. Some of them are pretty fit, but there are, yes, very definitely folks who are disabled that need assistance with ADA acceptable vans to get them to the locations that they'd like to be at.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Mr. Flynn, welcome.
Yes. Thank you very much, Chairman Hannon, members of the committee. My name is Lloyd Flynn. I live in the town of Chehalis, Washington, but I'm here representing the Association of Oregon Rail and Transit Advocates. And I also work with WASHARP, which is the rail advocacy group in the state of Washington. And as a Washingtonian, we're very grateful to hear your acknowledgement of the work that we have done up there. Just yesterday, I spoke with Representative Karen Schmidt, the co-chair of the House Transportation Committee in Washington, and she sends her greetings and best wishes to continuing our affirmative partnership with the state of Oregon. I want to make about three very quick points, partially in response to some of the comments that have been made here. First, that the governor of Wisconsin, Tommy Thompson, has pointed out our corridor. He's also the chairman of the board of Amtrak. Our corridor as the model for the nation in terms of private, public, and state-federal partnerships. In addressing his constituents in the state of Wisconsin, he pointed to Oregon and Washington as the model for the rest of the country to look toward in terms of affirmative growth of rail service. That's kind of nice hearing that coming from other parts of the country. A second point, and perhaps the answer to Senator Yee's concern, nothing responds to scale economies any more affirmatively than does passenger rail service. Indeed, with but one or two trains, the fare box return, the amount paid for by the passengers, tends to be low. But given the fact that with the addition of each additional train service, you don't need to concurrently add additional administration and infrastructure. So as a result, with each additional service, history has shown that the fare box return improves. This has come to pass in the state of California, in their San Joaquin and San Diego trains, several experiences from New England and obviously all over Europe and Japan. More trains means better fare box returns, less relative subsidy per passenger. I would like to thank Representative Butler for his support for West Side trains, and I must say that the AORTA organization, Representative Butler, is working actively with Amtrak to get a return of the Pioneer train. I would personally like to meet with you on that issue. We believe that the Mail and Express addition to a potential Pioneer is the answer of bringing that back, and bringing that back without considerable subsidies. A final point, we should not look at the development of rail passenger service as only a way to move people, albeit a very good one. It is also an economic development tool. The little town of Centralia, Washington, is served by Amtrak trains. 13,000 people. It was a hurting lumber town. They developed something called Destination Centralia. Roughly 30,000 people have come to Centralia by train in the last several years to visit their outlet stores, to visit their antique stores, and other attractions within that old historic city located just adjacent to the depot. Ms. Kay Campbell, the owner of the largest Chrysler dealer in that part of Washington, has said, as president of Destination Centralia, the Amtrak trains have saved my town economically. So in addition to our support for your investment as a means of moving people, it can also be seen as an environmentally and socially sound means of economic development as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Prime. Are there any questions or comments? No, thank you both. We have a couple other people that live beyond the 100-mile radius. Mark, is it Fouch? Mayor Pro Tem Olympia, Washington. Welcome to the committee, and Commissioner Rick Holt from Jackson County. Welcome down from the great state of Washington.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning. I'm Mark Fouch, as introduced Mayor Pro Tem of Olympia, but I'm here this morning in my capacity as 1999 Washington State co-chair of the Cascadia Project. You've already heard from the Oregon State co-chair of the Cascadia Project, Senator Castillo. Our counterpart in British Columbia is Mayor Hardy Staub of White Rock. We are here obviously in support of this improvement to your rail corridor. I would like to put our support into a bit of a context here, if I may. Cascadia Project was formed in 1993 and operates out of the Discovery Institute in Seattle. It's attempting to form a strategic alliance among Oregon and Washington and British Columbia to eliminate trade barriers and the policy and physical barriers to transportation back and forth among our states and province. We are made up of dues-paying members of local government, local planning organizations, ports, state transportation departments, and we have financial support from private foundations. If I had to encapsulate the goal of Cascadia, it's to take a very long look out and to try to work toward a region, a northwest region that includes British Columbia, that is, that grows gracefully, that increases its prosperity, preserves and improves its environment and the quality of life that we love out here. That's a tall order as population increases. So some of the things we see in the transportation area, which we think is the key to this, incidentally, is that the normal increase in north-south traffic, just with the increase in population, is being added to by the increased Canada, United States-Mexico trade from NAFTA. And fighting across that trend is the east-west trade, particularly agricultural products, trying to get to our ports. And they all come together in our major metropolitan hubs. Solving that problem would be hard enough, but what we think we really need over the next 20, 40, or 50 years is a very efficient, integrated transportation system that offers people and freight shippers economic and ecologically sound choices. And systems that are interconnected so that we can move seamlessly from one to another according to our needs as we arrive at a local place or to get to an airport and so on, that the intermodal connections are not that difficult as they are now in many cases. Furthermore, we've been concentrating on the Western Washington, Oregon, British Columbia corridor, and we're starting to see that there's a similar corridor developing over in the eastern side of the mountains, over in the Route 97 area. And projecting all this out, you can see that it's going to be a tall order to provide those kinds of transportation choices and facilities in just one corridor, let alone both. We have, in our phase one, have published a Connecting the Gateways and Trade Corridors report. We're starting to look beyond that now. And money, obviously, is always a problem in something like this. And we're just starting with the concept of a Cascadia Development Bank, which might be something akin to the St. Lawrence Seaway Authority, which could leverage public and private funds for the development of these transportation facilities. There might be five or six of these banks up and down the corridor. It's just right now a spark that we're starting to develop, but I think it could be interesting in the future. In the shorter term, Bruce Chapman, who's the president of the Discovery Project, has been appointed by the president to Amtrak's recovery board, the Get Well Board, and we are working very hard to get the House of Representatives Transportation Committee out here to the Northwest at the end of August to hold hearings on our corridor and hopefully to get them on a train and run them up and down the corridor a bit. And it would be nice if we could get them beyond Portland, by the way. The other thing we're going to be doing in our convener role in bringing people together from government and private industry and academia is our 1999 conference in October, which will be in Eugene this year. Hearing some of the testimony and some of the comments from the committee reminds me that although you may think that Washington is doing quite well, I've been nagging our legislature to do more on this rail funding. But you are ahead of our partners in British Columbia. They're just only now starting to see the value of speeding up that final connection from the United States border on into Vancouver. And I hope that they will take another bit of encouragement from your legislature's actions soon. I know you have plenty to read, but I've brought along this copies of this report, and also I stopped by Washington DOT for the revised intercity passenger rail plan for Washington State. It not only talks about Washington State's program, but it puts it in context with Oregon's and British Columbia's efforts, and private partners and Sound Transit. So I'll leave copies of those on the staff desk, if that's all right.
Thank you very much, Mayor. We appreciate you being here, and give our best regards to the people in Washington. We sincerely want to work with you in a cooperative mode. And we do have an issue. It's kind of like a map in my office that I have, and it shows Portland about where Bend is in the middle of the state. I live in an uninhabited territory, and we like to think that we are civilized, and there's one Oregon, not a whole bunch of Oregon. And that's what we're trying to do here, is work towards the benefit of all Oregonians in trying to incorporate transportation needs. Eastern has a lot of problems, Southern has problems, and together, collectively, we can solve the problem. And we want you to know we appreciate your work on this.
Thank you, sir.
Representative Butler.
Mr. Chair, not a comment, but not a question, but a comment for the mayor. It sounds like this is such a vital link to the whole process. I can't help but believe that this whole thing sounds like that somewhere here on this committee, we're holding the golden spike that's going to be driven in at Promontory Point to connect the railroad back together. So,
no, I don't think it's that. I think it's Oregon has been freeloading on the state of Washington, the federal government, on the rail system for the last several years, and now it's time to pay the pipers. That's the bottom line.
Well, we just have to find the golden spike.
Copies of this report, and also I stopped by Washington DOT for the revised intercity passenger rail plan for Washington State. It not only talks about Washington State's program, but it puts it in context with Oregon's and British Columbia's efforts and private partners and Sound Transit. So I'll leave copies of those on the staff desk, if that's all right.
Thank you very much, Mayor. We appreciate you being here, and give our best regards to the people in Washington. We sincerely want to work with you in a cooperative mode. And we do have an issue. It's kind of like a map in my office that I have, and it shows Portland about where Bend is in the middle of the state. But I live in an uninhabited territory, and we like to think that we are civilized, and there's one Oregon, not a whole bunch of Oregon. And that's what we're trying to do here, is work towards the benefit of all Oregonians in trying to incorporate transportation needs. Eastern has a lot of problems, Southern has problems, and together, collectively, we can solve the problem. And we want you to know we appreciate your work on this.
Thank you, sir.
Representative Butler.
Mr. Chair, not a comment, but just not a question, but a comment for the mayor. It sounds like this is such a vital link to the whole process. I can't help but believe that this whole thing sounds like that somewhere here on this committee, we're holding the golden spike that's going to be driven in at Promontory Point to connect the railroad back together. So,
no, I don't think it's that. I think that Oregon has been freeloading on the state of Washington, the federal government, on rail system for the last several years, and now it's time to pay the pipers. That's the bottom line.
Well, we just have to find the golden spike.
Well, we'll issue a lot of tickets at the end of this session, and see if we can do that. Thank you very much, Senator.
I have a Senator Lim. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to know, I don't know whether someone explained already or not, where the $117 million coming from the Washington State for this project?
It's coming from the general fund, because our motor fuel tax is constrained by the 18th Amendment to our Constitution to highways and ferries. Motor vehicle excise tax makes up a good deal of that, and other general fund revenue sources.
Okay. It's so amazing, you know, they could come up that much money from the general fund.
Oh, I'm glad they're doing it. Thank you.
And we are talking about only $14 million in our state, right?
I think so.
But, you know, what I'm looking at, I hope we look at the future photo project instead of just the patchwork. We are going nowhere. You know, every session we need this much money. We need to solve this problem once for all for the future. That's my perspective.
Okay, thank you.
Commissioner, welcome.
Good morning, sir. Thank you. My name is Commissioner Rick Holt. I'm chairman of the Jackson County Board of Commissioners. I'd like to thank you all for having these hearings. If I can allude to a little story about me growing up in a little place called Southern California, specifically the San Fernando Valley. I don't know if you're aware of that. But in growing up as a young kid, I was able to take a red car at the age of 7, 8, 9, 10, downtown Hollywood to go to the old Hitchin' Post movie theater and see Hoot Gibson. I know none of you up here remember Hoot Gibson. But then along came the planners in the 50s saying, you know what? We need to build freeways for cars. And by golly, if we didn't build freeway after freeway after freeway, and you know we've got more cars and made General Motors happy and Ford. And now, guess what? All these years later, they said, geez, why'd we tear out that old red car line? Well, history repeats itself, but fortunately, I got out of Dodge pretty early and moved up to a wonderful place called Jackson County. And assessing the situation, looked at the possibilities of the Rogue Valley becoming another San Fernando Valley. And believe me, when I speak from my heart, it could. If we don't plan for the future and plan for rail. Representative Butler, I share your interest in remote areas, as Senator Hannon and Mr. Frohmeyer had mentioned before. We seem to be taking steps back in history and not, or going forward, thinking we're going forward, but really going back. But in the case of Los Angeles and San Fernando Valley and Southern California, they've run out of room. They can't build any more roads. And now they've gone to boring tunnels underneath places to run into the La Brea tar pits. And it's, I don't think it takes a rocket scientist to figure out that if in these times that we're in right now, that rail certainly does a job for us. And I'd like to thank Claudia Howell and Bob Krebs for their help in trying to bring us back up to speed in Southern Oregon. They have been very helpful to us. We have a chance in Southern Oregon because we have the infrastructure already built. It's not like reinventing the wheel, and no pun intended, and putting in new rail. We have the ability right now to run rail in Jackson County, run from Sutton, Ashland, back up to Grants Pass. And in times past, we used to have a self-contained vehicle called the old Whiskey Run. And unfortunately, or fortunately, Josephine County was a dry county, and Ashland or Jackson County was a little wet. So you can see that it was very important in those times to have commuter rail service. But as we look forward to the coming years, I'd like to put something in your mind that hasn't been addressed yet. My background is with International Oil Company for some 13 years. But if we look at the scope of things that is happening worldwide right now, let's take China, for instance. Here you have a third of the world's population. And back in the 70s, when I was with Gulf, we do nothing but talk about China and when they became industrialized and what was going to happen to this world energy supply that we have. And lo and behold, 2 years ago, China doubled its oil. You used to be an exporter of oil, and now is an importer of oil, and just doubled their demand for oil from the Arab Emirates. And now General Motors, Honda, all your major manufacturers of automobiles are rushing in to China now to do what? Build cars. And what do those cars run on? They run on oil. You think we're talking about prices now? You haven't seen anything yet. We're going to be in one heck of an energy crunch in this nation. This nation is 60% totally dependent on offshore crude, foreign crude, to run this nation. And we have, or our energy companies have, very little access to areas because of the environmental movement to get back in the swing of things and open up a lot of new fields that we know are there. I'm here today to ask for your help. We have been talking about it for a long time, but we need some help to get back in the swing of things to create a commuter rail service again from Ashland to Grants Pass at least. And then hopefully someday we can reinstitute what we used to have in the 50s. We lost it, unfortunately, but the passenger rail service. The growth is on the I-5 corridor, and only stands to reason that someday we're not looking at high-speed rail, but we're looking at some rail system that we can bring traffic up from the Bay Area. A family can get on the train. Whoever is the breadwinner in the family can use their computers to do their homework and take the whole family with them. The I-5 corridor, if you have driven it lately, is rutted. I mean, we aren't going to have money in the future, I don't imagine, to pave over the whole I-5 system again. So we've got to look at alternative sources. I would respectfully request that, if not this year, the next session, that we look at funding some real rail study money for engineering and feasibility. We're going to be hurting here pretty soon. If your gasoline prices reach $2, $3, $4 a gallon, like they are in some places in Europe, you're going to have a real problem. And how do you get people around? Rail is there. I am certainly fortunate enough to live in a community that is supportive of this, and I know that many of you would take the train if you had the opportunity to do that. Representative Butler, I share your interest in your neck of the woods for having some semblance of commuter rail or something. We have the equipment now that we can run on our track, where we've been limited before. Now, Europe, we all talk about high-speed rail and so forth, and why it's so successful over there. It's so successful in Europe because the gasoline prices are out of sight. And it's going to happen here. It's not good. It's going to happen here. We have a finite resource of that petroleum product. You only can put so many straws in the ground before you deplete it. That's why Jackson County, as some other counties, have rushed to natural gas as an alternative fuel for some of our vehicles. But I wish you would take that into consideration in anything you can do. I knew I had an hour when I came here, so I'm short in my speech. But these are some of the things that are in the future that you're going to have to contend with. All of us are going to have to contend with. And I'd appreciate anything you can do for little old Jackson County, or Representative Butler's area. It's the time has come that we seriously look at this. If we're going to take multitudes of automobiles or trucks off the highway, this is the answer. And we've got to build that infrastructure or put that money in place now. Thank you so much for allowing me this time.
Thank you for being here. We're getting down. We have approximately 15 minutes left, and then we have floor session in the Senate this morning. Is there anyone that cannot come back to a future public hearing if we're to schedule one that you would like to testify today? Yes, ma'am. Yes, sir. If you would come up and join us here at the table. Sir, you that raised your hand. Yes, ma'am. You and your son, come on up. And identify your name, please.
Good morning. Thank you, sir, and all the members of the Joint Committee. My name is Jerry Gerard Trigaser, and I'm pleased to be here today, part of the great sector of the American society called the independent sector. I serve as a volunteer with community transportation in Portland area. And I come to speak for those people here who also have a dream about the future, such as our rail transportation people have. And those people are the frail and disabled, who long to share a full life of independence, spontaneity, and convenience like the rest of us. When the automobile is not guaranteed, then a transportation service can make all the difference in the world. It has been noted elsewhere, statewide needs for elderly and disabled transportation would require a $50 million investment. Given, obviously, the uncertainty of that kind of money, however, it would seem that we should be able to pursue a more modest appropriation, such as the $10 million annually or the $20 million biannually in the governor's budget. This represents only a $5 million annual increase over what is normally allocated. Current fixed route transportation meets one quarter to one third of the needs of these individuals. Current paratransit services provide possibly one half of what's needed. In the case of volunteer transportation that I represent, 181 rides were provided last year, and yet fully 20% more were denied through lack of capacity. Volunteer transportation is a contract partner with TriMet, provides an invaluable connection with 26 nonprofit community agencies committed to paratransit service throughout the metro area. It is truly a unique program, admired by the rest of the nation, and yet existing capacity for transporting the disabled and elderly is underutilized due to inadequate funds. People in need are denied because neither volunteer transportation nor the partner agencies have the funds to operate at full capacity. We provide cost-effective, centralized driver training and oversight. We coordinate the service throughout the area. This is not a taxi service. Rather, rides are grouped whenever and wherever possible. On the other hand, the driver does not abandon those who are mentally and physically too frail to be left alone. Prior to retirement, I spent 25 years with a community-based national voluntary health agency with a strong commitment to patient service. Of all the things we did for people, none was more appreciated than mobilizing volunteers to get people to treatment. In rural Oregon, and I'm speaking about the communities that many of you members come from, you know, I had personal experience with this. In rural Oregon, the program was a badge of honor for the organization. In the metro area, the same was true, but the numbers overwhelmed the volunteer capacity. If that is true with one agency, you can imagine the reality for a large number of agencies and senior centers in the Tri-County area. Several months ago, a disabled volunteer who was chairman of a senior computer learning program in which I teach was severely depressed when his wife was hospitalized for 2 weeks. He could not visit or be with her without spending $50 a day for cab fares, which was clearly beyond his means. Friends and volunteer transportation came to the rescue when his predicament was discovered. Stories like this put a human face on what some may seem as a frivolous need. Wayne is not the exception, but rather typical of many of our citizens, I believe. The cost benefit to the state derived from helping people to live at home versus an institution is easily argued. Likewise, the business community enjoys the rewards of a neighborhood consumer rather than a burden of a subsidized nursing home client. In conclusion, I hope you will give positive consideration to this item in the budget.
Thank you. Questions? If not, would you like to give your name and identify yourself?
My name is Wendy Temko. I'm a private citizen, I guess, from Portland. And Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I'm just here as a train rider. My family has taken the train many times over the years, and each time it has been a very positive experience. It is much more relaxing than driving a car because you can walk around, you can read, you can enjoy the scenery. It is also at least 10 times safer than a car per million passenger miles. I myself feel a great deal of personal safety as well on the train. I have two sons. My youngest is 12. And every time we've gone on the train, I feel perfectly safe for him to walk around and not always be in my sight. So that's very important to me. My only other comment is that we need more train service in order to alleviate the growing traffic congestion and air pollution. And one more thing, the service on the train has always been excellent. It is a very pleasant way to travel. And someone mentioned civilized. I think that's a very good description of train travel. It was a civilized way to travel. And everyone I know who's taken it has never, ever had any kind of negative experience. So that's just what I have to say as a private citizen. Thank you. My son.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. My name is Ben Melden. And Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I missed the morning of school to come and say that the train is just a really fun and positive way of traveling for me. And every year my friend has a birthday, just a little birthday celebration where he takes me and maybe one other person up to Seattle on the train from Portland and to watch the Mariners play. And that would not be very good if that we couldn't do that anymore. And it's also I always feel really safe when I'm on the train. And I wouldn't want to discontinue it also because it's my favorite way to travel. And I'd much rather be in a train than a car and an airplane because you just have to sit for the whole time, and it's really boring.
And look at it like that.
I appreciate your comments, Ben. My wife and I was born and raised in Oregon, and the first time I ever took the train all the way from Klamath Falls to Seattle last December, and it was the most delightful experience. In fact, they had a magician on board for the little ones to have programs and entertainment for them. And I was just really thoroughly impressed with Amtrak and the job that they're doing. And now with the Cascadia project and what it is, I just wish we could take it around to a lot more communities. But rest assured, we do support alternative forms of transportation, and that's what this committee is ultimately going to be forced to deal with in some of its decision making. But the thing we need is work together, because we have other youngsters your age come down here and tell us to give more to schools. And to give more to schools, that means somebody has to take away from somebody else's program. So that's part of the dilemma we're caught up in. We do support schools, but we do support transportation as well, and I want you to just be aware of what our difficulties are. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to echo the fact that there's a magician that comes with my Suburban. Every time I pull into a gas station, he empties my wallet.
That's a state policeman.
Oh, I do that too.
Is there anybody else who, I have a manager from Albany. You can come back? Okay. Yes, sir? Please, both of you come up. Thank you.
Chairman Hannon, representative and members of the committee. Good morning. My name is Ray Polani. I live in Portland at 6110 Southeast Ankeny Street. I'm here to represent myself, my daughter, and the Citizens for Better Transit, of which I am co-chair. I'm a retired savings and loan executive, 75 years old, have been active in earnest alternative transportation issues since the early 70s. I started commuting by bicycle to my office back in 1961, when a grown-up man on a bike was an oddity, to say the least. In 1975, I co-founded Citizens for Better Transit and joined ORA, the Oregon Association of Railway Passengers, which is now known as AORTA, the Association of Oregon Rail and Transit Advocates. I walk very often, just as I ride public transportation, by choice, often. I'm here to plead with you and urge you to pass Senate Bill 1051, ORA's Budget Bill 5053. The reasons are many, but primarily it makes good economic sense. And it will help Albany, Corvallis, Newport, Eugene, Medford, Klamath Falls, the Willamette Valley, Bend, Burns, and Ontario, Oregon. It will help many transit-dependent voters by providing needed connections with useful alternatives for everybody else. Eventually, we will all need it as we get older. I got here today by Thruway bus, operated by Amtrak with ODOT and taxpayers' assistance, but I paid $15 of my own pocket for the round trip from Portland. With soaring gas prices, it makes a lot of economic sense. Hope you saw and read the Saturday Oregonian op-ed piece entitled Gas Tanks on Full, Supplies Heading to Empty. I have recently renewed my Oregon driver's license, number 2501. I started in 1953 as a motorcycle-only license. I am hearing impaired and now required to wear glasses when I drive. The writing is on the wall, and I can read it. Before too long, I know I will face other driving restrictions. By the way, a month ago, I took the 55 Alive AARP-sponsored course for driving seniors. I will retake it in 2 years for my own and everybody else's good. Even you are getting older. It is only a matter of time. We will all be transit dependent. Our only daughter, who's 42, has been recently diagnosed with inflammatory arthritis. She's transit dependent now when others cannot drive her, and chances are it will get worse. I do not want to take much more of your time except to plead with you to pass favorably on Senate Bill 1051, House Bill 5053, providing funds needed to keep and improve rail and connecting bus service in our beloved Oregon. Washington State, the national government, Amtrak, and ODOT are committed to more and better transportation alternatives. Oregon must continue to partner with them. For now, the money has to come from general fund revenues or lottery proceeds or cigarette taxes in competition with other worthwhile needs. In the best rational world, it would come from transportation taxes, like the federal funds. It could have, if in 1993 the Oregon legislature had passed out to a vote of the people Senate Joint Resolution 2, which was a constitutional amendment allowing funding of, quote, projects which reduce the traffic burden or pollution from motor vehicle taxes on public roads, unquote. That is unfinished agenda. But for now, spare $14 million of biennial money for this very worthwhile economic cause. Thank you for your patience. If you have any questions, I'll be glad to answer them.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yes. If you'd like to identify yourself, please, welcome to the committee.
Chairman Hannon, surviving membership of the committee. I'm Ken McFarland. All Oregonians will benefit if the legislature authorizes the full funding, which House Bill 5053 provides for Willamette Valley Railway Passenger Service by the Cascade Corridor train and coordinated bus operation. That fund will increase transport capacity and safety in that corridor more if applied to railway service than to highways. In addition to the Seattle-Los Angeles train taking in each direction, during the 18-month period 1980 and 81 as state assistants. Passenger trains made two daily round trips between Eugene and Portland. 18 months. In that short period, I took 24 round trips, equivalent of 24 round trips, usually accompanied by my wife, on several occasions by friends and other family members. During that period, I owned an automobile. When circumstances warranted, I drove it. 3 years ago, failing eyesight induced me to cease driving before a mishap occurred. So many whose vision is no better than mine continue to drive. Prudent policymakers would intervene. Public officials should not behave as though their prime function is to stimulate the market for automobiles. The population trend is unmistakably swelling the post-retirement age segment. Many in that age group, myself included, very much want to visit friends and relatives throughout the Willamette Valley and do other things such as coming to testify in Salem. And conveniently scheduled service along designated routes is best suited to becoming the framework for that purpose. Passenger trains could most adequately authorizes full funding, which House Bill 5053 provides for Willamette Valley Railway passenger service by the Cascade Corridor train and coordinated bus operation. That fund will increase transport capacity and safety in that corridor more if applied to railway service than to highways. In addition to the Seattle-Los Angeles train taking in each direction, during the 18-month period in 1980 and 81 with state assistance, passenger trains made two daily round trips between Eugene and Portland. 18 months. In that short period, I took 24 round trips, equivalent of 24 round trips, usually accompanied by my wife, on several occasions by friends, and other family members. During that period, I owned an automobile. When circumstances warranted, I drove it. 3 years ago, failing eyesight induced me to cease driving before a mishap occurred. So many whose vision is no better than mine continue to drive. Prudent policymakers would intervene. Public officials should not behave as though the prime function is to stimulate the market for automobiles. The population trend is unmistakably swelling the post-retirement age segment. Many in that age group, ourselves included, very much want to visit friends and relatives throughout the Willamette Valley and do other things such as coming to testify in Salem and conveniently schedule service along designated routes is best suited to becoming the framework for that purpose. Passenger trains could most adequately serve ourselves and many other people who need or desire to travel along the corridor between Eugene and Portland.
Thank you very much. Questions? Sir, would you identify yourself?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, other members of the committee. And I will be short within the 1 minute that I have left. My name is Preston Holt, and I'm a retired commercial real estate broker. I'm here representing Northwest Horton Ministries as treasurer and a volunteer driver. We're one of the agencies that provides the volunteer transportation that a previous speaker was referring to. And I just wanted to echo some of the things he said. We're probably one of the smaller agencies. We have a budget of $30,000 a year. And we have 20 volunteer drivers, one vehicle that we partially own with the state of Oregon. We provide, though, with that limited resource, over 500 trips a month.
and we provide a service that's really not available from other sources. Our primary people that we drive are elderly and handicapped. Probably 80% are elderly and handicapped. The same percentage are low-income, no-income, subsidized housing. And we need additional monies always to operate. We operate on a thin budget. We're looking at a possible donation of some equipment, and we have to figure out how we can use it, how we can fund it. So I just want to say that we can use any money that we can get, and we're just one of the small bits of the total package, so everybody else is the same way. We do provide probably the most economic service that's available, in my opinion.
Thank you very much. Question? If not, is there anyone else? I'm going to ask this one more time because we want to carry over to a future meeting, and if you can come back in the next week or so, we would love to have you, because the Senate has gone in discussion. They'll probably be shortly putting a call to the Senate on to get all the members here. So if everybody else can accommodate our schedule by trying to come back, we would appreciate it. Ma'am, you had your hand up?
Yes. I just have a short statement.
Okay.
After riding the train up this morning and being stuck for an hour waiting for Union Pacific to fix the broken rail, I want to say other things. Mr. Chairman and the rest of the committee, my name is Patricia Noyes. I'm from Eugene, Oregon, where I live at 2014 Elk Avenue. I'm testifying today as an aging retiree whose driving capabilities are not quite adequate to handle the traffic on Interstate 5 anymore. I ride the train at least four times a month, and the Amtrak buses besides that. There are two points that I want to address, and these are questions that I've been asked. Many people tell me that driving is much faster than the train, so why do I take the train? My answer to that is that I have to take the train. The train is capable of much faster speeds. But like this morning, the train sat on the track for 1 hour waiting for some work on the track. Then we had to wait for a freight train while we sat on the siding. So I got here late. But I think if the track could be upgraded, and if some reasonable accommodation could be made with Union Pacific over some of these arrangements and scheduling on the rails, we could have a very good, fast rail system. The train certainly can go that fast. And if we had better, more comfortable, faster and more comfortable ride, we could increase our ridership a lot. Besides that, you can do all kinds of other things on the train. You can read, you can work, you can get a cup of coffee. And then many people tell me that no one is interested in riding the train, so why should the taxpayers pay for something that you don't want? Well, a couple of years ago that would have been true, but it's not true now. And many times the train is filled to capacity or over capacity, where some people have to sit in the snack bars. There are no more seats. So I would urge you to pass SB 1051. Certainly, the train is necessary for many of us, and that certainly is going to mean a lot to the aging population who no longer should be on the road, like myself. So thank you very much.
Thank you for coming up, and we appreciate your comments, and hope you get to return home a little earlier. All right. Any questions or comments? If not, we are adjourned until 8:30 tomorrow morning when we'll be in work session
on Parks Department.
Parks Department at 8:30 in the morning in our regular hearing room.